rights and women's rights were often at odds with the country's indigenous culture. Later, all Afghans, mainly well-known figures like the late Gardizi, realized that the U.S. has been working for its own interests.
In the meantime, the attendees of this webinar insist on following the path of great figures like the late Gardizi as the symbols of strength, resistance and freedom-seeker leaders. Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
In the limelight. Roger Blanford, a Stanford professor of physics and Slack professor of particle physics and astrophysics, said 50 years ago, when astrophysicists started speculating about how the magnetic field might behave close to a black hole, they had no idea that one day we might have the techniques to observe this directly and see Einstein's general theory of relativity in action. We now present you an article written by Dave Makichuk. The piece is titled Black Hole Discovery Backs Einstein's Theory. The article has been published by the Asia Times. Yet another scenario that was predicted by Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity has been confirmed more than a century after it was first posed. And it all began when Stanford University astrophysicist Dan Wilkins noticed an intriguing pattern as he watched X-rays being flung out into the universe by the supermassive black hole at the center of a galaxy 800 million light-years away. According to a report by Taylor Kubota of Stanford News, Wilkins observed a series of bright flares of X-rays, exciting but not unprecedented. These bright light flares are not unusual because although light can't escape a black hole, the enormous gravity around it can heat up material to millions of degrees. This can release radio waves and X-rays. Sometimes this superheated material is hurled out into space by rapid jets, including X-rays and gamma rays. But then, the telescopes recorded something unexpected and exciting. Additional flashes of X-rays that were smaller, later, and of different colors than the bright flares. According to theory, these luminous echoes were consistent with X-rays reflected from behind a black hole. But even a basic understanding of black holes tells us that that is a strange place for light to come from. Wilkins, who is a research scientist at the Kavli Institute for Particle Astrophysics and Cosmology at Stanford University and Slack National Accelerator Laboratory, said, "Any light that goes into that black hole doesn't come out, so we shouldn't be able to see anything that's behind the black hole." However, it is another strange characteristic of the black hole that makes this observation possible, and that takes us back to the great physicist himself, who released his theory of general relativity way back in 1905. Albert Einstein predicted that light must bend and reflect due to the strong gravitational pull around a black hole. Wilkins explained, "The reason we can see that is because that black hole is warping space, bending light and twisting magnetic fields around itself." The serendipitous discovery, detailed in a paper published on 28th of July in Nature, is the first direct observation of light from behind a black hole, a scenario that was predicted by Albert Einstein's theory but never confirmed until now. Roger Blanford, a co-author of the paper and a Stanford professor of physics and Slack professor of particle physics and astrophysics, said, 50 years ago, when astrophysicists started speculating about how the magnetic field might behave close to a black hole, they had no idea that one day we might have the techniques to observe this directly and see Einstein's general theory of relativity in action. Researchers weren't even looking to confirm Einstein's theory. They were originally attempting to uncover the mysteries of an odd feature of black holes known as the corona, the source of the bright X-ray light. Material falling into a supermassive black hole powers the brightest continuous sources of light in the universe, and as it does so, forms a corona around the black hole. This light, which is X-ray light, can be analyzed to map and characterize a black hole. The leading theory for what a corona is starts with gas sliding into the black hole where it superheats to millions of degrees. At that temperature, electrons separate from the atoms, creating a magnetized plasma. Caught up in the powerful spin of the black hole, the magnetic field arcs so high above the black hole and twirls about itself so much that it eventually breaks altogether. A situation so reminiscent of what happens around our own sun that it borrowed the name corona. Dan Wilkins said, "This magnetic field getting tied up and then snapping close to the black hole heats everything around it and produces these high-energy electrons that then go on to produce the X-rays." As Dan Wilkins took a closer look to investigate the origin of the flares, he saw a series of smaller flashes. The researchers determined that these are the same X-ray flares but reflected from the back of the disk, a first glimpse at the far side of a black hole. Dan Wilkins said, "I've been building theoretical predictions of how these echoes appear to us for a few years." He added, "I'd already seen them in the theory I've been developing, so once I saw them in the telescope observations, I could figure out the connection." The black hole is about 10 million times more massive than our sun, and it's located in the center of a nearby spiral galaxy called Aizwiki, 1,800 million light years away from Earth. The observations were made using two space-based X-ray telescopes, NASA's New Star and the European Space Agency's XMM Newton. More observation will be needed to understand these black hole coronas and the European Space Agency's upcoming X-ray observatory called ATHENA, stands for Advanced Telescope for High Energy Astrophysics, will launch in 2031. Dan Wilkins said, "It's got a much bigger mirror than we've ever had on an X-ray telescope, and it's going to let us get higher resolution looks in much shorter observation times." He added, "So the picture we're starting to get from the data at the moment is going to become much clearer with these new observatories." From here, astronomers hope to use the various colors observed as the X-ray echoes travel around the black hole to create a three-dimensional map of the black hole surroundings. They also hope to learn how the corona produces such bright flares.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Iran Today.
Think of a massive hemorrhage. The Iranian economy has bled out more than once. With the triple shock of sanctions, oil market collapse, and coronavirus, the COVID-19, to its system, it is in its third consecutive year of recession. Add a loss of water to the problems, and you'll get the overall picture. The country is still standing, however, as with every challenge comes a chance. And the new government will be facing a flood of challenges, foreign and domestic, to turn around. Iran's first stroke, apparently mild but ground-setting, came towards the end of the Ahmadinejad era, when people saw their money devalued almost overnight by a double blow. As for sanctions, this country has been vaccinated against them by lighter doses over 40 years and more. And so it is ready to take whatever is thrown at it, but at the same time, it's been exhausted by constant blows. Which challenges must Raisi take by the horns first? And which untapped chances can he grab? For answers, stay with me, Leila Faramarzi, on Iran Today. Mr. Kamali is Secretary General of the Islamic Labour Party. He worked with the Rafsanjani administration in a very different era. His challenge of choice would be...
You see, it's a matter of modernizing and rebuilding the economy. That is, pushing the economy toward competitiveness. Whatever activities being undertaken in the country must be done with the benefits and national interests in mind. We need to determine the layout and find out what can be done in which areas and how we can earn our revenue. The same goes for political issues. I've heard that Mr. Raisi says he's willing to form a super-factional cabinet. This is laudable, as he's committing himself to using national capabilities.
To see the full half, Mr. Sorhu lists all the good deeds he'd like to see done to jumpstart economic improvement. He is an analyst with reformist leanings and a construction engineer. And so, a favorite with him is housing. He's also a man of position with the welfare organization.
Constructing houses and buildings will activate some 150 other manufacturing industries. They should change the focus from building new houses in the suburbs and deserts. Something I noticed in Mr. Raisi's plan, which is a good one, that was also an objective
of the former government,
but wasn't implemented due to a shortage of resources. They can instead focus their attention on using metropolitan areas with worn-out buildings. They are potentially suitable construction sites as they already have all infrastructures, including access, water, power and gas.
Given the array of problems, each branching out into more than one and finally automatically interconnecting as a web, allow me to just go through challenges or prospective chances in a linear fashion to wrap up in our given 25 minutes. But first, the mention of what was a winning card for the Rouhani government. That would be the JCPOA, or nuclear deal of 2015, that limited Iran's nuclear program in return for sanctions relief and extensive foreign investment in this country.
So you see, the Rouhani administration's grand plan could have saved the economy, except he put too much trust in the West, all his eggs in one basket, according to principalists. And former U.S. President Trump just pinned the nuclear deal on a whim in 2018, and he added to sanctions that were. Now add domestic corruption to that, and you find Iran where it is. But that's not all on the president, as he is an executor of policies that are determined by the system as a whole. Inflation is always a biggie. It inflated further by this order. Sanctions stripped Iran of the bulk of its oil export revenues, so the country printed unbacked money. This unleashed liquidity in the market caused the local currency, or the rial, to drop further in value. And that gave us a fat lot of inflation. The rial depreciated eightfold in 3 years and now stands at around 250,000 rials to a dollar. And the inflation rate reached around 50% in March-April 2021, its highest level in 3 years.
When there's no supply of goods, in other words, when there's no jump in production, liquidity would naturally lead to rising inflation. On the other hand, you can't refuse to increase people's salaries, as what they're being paid is the bare minimum to make ends meet. So what's the basic solution so the liquidity won't cause inflation? That's increasing domestic production and reforming monetary, banking, and financial policies to benefit the producers.
The average rate of inflation in the last 12 months compared to its equivalent previous period reached 38.9%. The point-to-point inflation rate for essential commodities such as food and drinks reached 63%, while non-food goods and services increased by 43%. Mr. Sururi is chair of the Revolution Forces Coalition Council with similar priorities to Mr. Sorhu as a city council member. He squeezed in an interview with us after hours.
It's only natural to expect that Mr. Raisi's most pressing challenge would be controlling, or put it in better words, managing the liquidity. It's a grave risk to Iran's economy, but I believe we can turn it into an opportunity with some insight. We should make the country attractive for domestic or foreign investors and eliminate the middlemen and prevent the huge force which is destroying everything on its path and causing the collapse of the economy. I think the country has great attractions that could navigate the liquidity to boost the economy.
With the Rouhani administration, foreign policy would have been a guiding light to the economy. Raisi is also keen on reviving the JCPOA, or Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, with the six world powers. But his approach and foreign policy outlook have been quite different. While Rouhani's look was to the West, Raisi is focused on neighbors and perhaps Russia and China relations. But how he times that and how situational and under control he keeps it is of great importance.
Would you say now is the best time to reinforce relations with China and Russia, the way things have been going in Syria and with the Sputnik production line in Iran?
In my opinion, there hasn't been a serious synergy between our foreign policy, our diplomacy, and our internal politics. The government didn't act as a link between them. That's why we're acting like we're independent islands in terms of our domestic and foreign policy. This would result in our missing great opportunities.
Raisi believes the priority should be resolving issues with Iran's neighbors before moving to the international level, and that can serve as a lever to pressure the U.S. with the nuclear deal.
Foreign policy in Iran is decided by consensus among key security and foreign policy institutions. And finally, it's signed off on by the leader, Ayatollah Khamenei. The leader had indicated he was in favor of reviving the nuclear deal. But all those years ago, when he had originally given the go-ahead, it was with a usual expression of vindicated distrust for the U.S.
Raisi did stress the national line in his first news conference since the election, saying he would not negotiate over Iran's ballistic missile program or its support of regional resistance groups. It is now to be seen who he finally picks out for the cabinet, especially foreign minister.
Even if there was no JCPOA, our wrong policies would lead us to this situation. The JCPOA is a political agreement that could be a prelude to coordination and constructive issues and put a stop to some of the harassment and obstacles the West had imposed against Iran. Of course, since they have problems with us due to cultural differences and the way they look at us, even if the JCPOA is restored and implemented, a fraction of the sanctions might be lifted. But the others imposed for human rights and missile defense programs would stay in place.
It's not just foreign policy affecting relations. Corona has taken a bite out of the country's economic balance and relations also. How this little bug might be handled henceforth as it surges as a fifth and sixth wave, our guests will explain.
We have to accept the coronavirus pandemic as a reality and plan the economy accordingly. In that regard, I think the pandemic has created an opportunity for us, although it has also led to catastrophes. We're a country that was, and still is, somewhat reluctant to automate tasks. But the pandemic has changed our perception, and we're now believing that traditional approaches can't respond to the changing times. I think we've made great progress in smartization in the past few years.
In November 2020, stricter health containment measures were introduced after Iran registered over a million COVID-19 cases and the death toll climbed to under 50,000 deaths. The measures have been reintroduced with each wave of the pandemic but haven't been stably maintained on the balance. Constraints are a necessary vice as the economic shock of the corona pandemic has pushed more households into poverty. To soften the shock, the authorities assigned new rounds of cash transfers and consumption loans for lower income deciles and households without a permanent source of income. Social assistance and COVID-19 healthcare will continue to add to government expenditure growth. There's plenty more to be said, but first a quick media review to give other outlets a chance to get a word in. Here's to put it in actual words. The Financial Tribune talks of foreign policy priorities. JCPOA Saudi ties should be top of foreign policy agenda in next admin. The incoming administration needs to put the state of the 2015 nuclear deal and Iran's ties with Saudi Arabia on top of its foreign policy agenda, according to an expert on international affairs. I think the future of the JCPOA is an important issue that needs to be determined, Hassan Beheshipour said in an interview with ISNA. Resolving issues with Saudi Arabia is another top priority, according to Beheshipour, since interaction with this country has an important impact on Iran's ties with other neighboring and regional countries. Iran and Saudi Arabia are two neighbors and two major regional powers, which are rivals at political security and economic sectors, but can also cooperate with each other, he said. Meh News tells of Raisi's domestic priority. People livelihood, top priority for future administration. A large number of lawmakers in the Iranian parliament met with Ebrahim Raisi, during which the president-elect stressed that people's livelihood will top agenda of his future government. Ebrahim Azizi, the lawmaker that represents the people of Shiraz in the Iranian parliament, said about the meeting between Ebrahim Raisi and the lawmakers that in the meeting the MPs expressed their viewpoints on various and important issues in the country with the president-elect. Azizi said that a large number of MPs were present in the meeting with Sayyid Ebrahim Raisi. The lawmakers said that in the meeting, urgent issues that need to be resolved quickly were raised and discussed with Raisi, adding that the possible ways to effective and constant interaction between the parliament and future administration were also discussed. Not to forget the importance of vaccines, Tehran Times has done a piece. Raisi calls for speedy vaccination drive. President-elect Ebrahim Raisi held a meeting with authorities and experts engaged in producing and distributing vaccines for the COVID-19 pandemic, urging an immediate action to vaccinate the citizens against the highly contagious virus. The meeting was attended by Health Minister Saeed Namaki, head of the Iranian Red Crescent Society, Karim Hemmati, chairman of the headquarters for executing the order of Imam Khomeini, Mohammad Mokhber, a number of lawmakers, the CEOs of producers of vaccines, managers of the institutions and companies working on the distribution of vaccines, and the vaccine program experts, Tasnim reported. The campaign against controlling the deadly virus should continue unstoppably, he said, adding his future government will prioritize allocating the necessary funds for vaccinating the citizens. Undoubtedly, what has been done so far in areas of vaccination has been necessary, but definitely not enough, he added. That would be it for this segment, but there's more to come, so do stay tuned. time for a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Ibrahim Raisi came forth with quite a few economic slogans for his presidential campaign. How realistic and readily achievable those are yet to be seen.
Because we are a developing country, there is a lot of ground to cover. We can do so much work that if a day was 100 hours long instead of 24 hours, we'd still be running short of time. I'm exaggerating, of course, but there's a lot of work to be done and many facilities to do it with. From manpower to material issues, which are now being left unused.
To go back to the beginning of the problem, the GDP growth rate dropped to -6% in 2018 and -6.8% in 2019. This is while the inflation rate increased to 30.22% and 34.6% in 2018 and 19, respectively. Much of the decrease in the GDP, gross domestic product, was associated with the huge drop in oil exports. Over $62.5 billion in 2018 to $29 billion in 2020. In 2020, while the economy struggled with a high inflation rate of 36.5% amidst the coronavirus pandemic and ongoing U.S. sanctions, the GDP started to recover. It grew to 1.5% after 2 years. However, given the ongoing political and economic challenges, the newly elected president will face difficulties in the economy and labor market, not to mention mismanagement and corruption.
Who owns what? Isn't everything all registered? Where do they publish this? Who has received loans? Some people receive money from banks and their names become classified. Who isn't willing to pay their debts? Who isn't paying taxes? All this means abetting the violators and a lack of transparency. If we are to act transparently, we need to continue all our activities within a glass room so everyone can monitor the officials and be able to assess their performance.
Raisi's first campaign speech was on May the 27th, and his promises were summarized in good governance to revive the Iranian economy. 7 broad promises were to give low-interest loans to poor households in the lower half of income distribution, to increase government subsidies for health care and decrease households' share in medical and health expenditures from 43% to 20%, to construct 4 million houses to create 4 million jobs, giving low-income people and graduates with tertiary degrees priority, and to decrease rent from 50% to 30%. How realistic these promises are, an expert tells.
I think the incoming government's policies towards building new houses are correct. The target of building 1 million housing units annually can potentially pull the brakes on the unbridled rise in the price and create a balance between supply and demand, ending this unimaginable situation for the housing sector.
Iran's political scene is pretty uniform now, with principalists dominating all three powers. Principalists basically claim it'll make it easier for them to take consistent, comprehensive economic decisions for economic reforms without in-house fighting getting in the way.
To get things done, when all three branches of the government think similarly, isn't an impressive feat. If a manager has access to 1,000 suggestions and can choose one among the many, he has done an impressive job. The more suggestions and ideas are at the manager's disposal, the better the decision would turn out. When we talk about the advantages of coordination, we are talking about the implementation of the plans. They should make the decision and then coordinate the efforts to implement it and move forward.
An effective pill for a suffering economy? Privatization to eliminate rentiering and hoarding resources and to cause competition and create jobs. That's the idea, but not all resources are wise to fully privatize, and who gets to win enterprises as private investor is not easy to control.
According to the Constitution, the economic units and enterprises owned by the government should be transferred to non-governmental sectors, but this transfer also needs some considerations. The first and most important consideration is the competence of the people to whom these units will be assigned. Those who already work in the unit have the best skills to run them, because they are the ones whose livelihoods are tied to the growth and development of the production unit. And if they can get hold of the units in form of cooperatives and others, that could be the best case scenario.
With US sanctions came lower oil export revenues, and the government, we said, tried to make up for this by printing unbacked money. The government also attempted selling its shares in major Iranian enterprises on the stock market, to privatize, that is. But most shares sold on the stock market in the capital markets tend to end up in the hands of semi-state entities, and many of the shares crashed anyway. This is while the budget law of the year starting March 21, 2019 had foreseen a generation of $2.5 billion of revenues from privatization. Privatization has been on the agenda since the early 1990s, but Article 44 of the mid-2000s stipulates all major industries be dominated by the government. As such, in 2004, major figures, including the leader, agreed on how to withdraw the government from major economic activities. And the new interpretation of Article 44 defined the government's dominance through control over all regulatory entities, as well as a minimum 20% share for the government in all privatized entities.
We have adopted the wrong methods in the economy. If all wealth and riches of the world are poured inside Iran, the current economic formula would waste all that way. Money being lost, embezzlement and fraud are separate issues, but the current economic formula would destroy all that wealth.
Select industries remain under government monopoly, as it should be, I'd say. For example, upstream oil and gas and tobacco, as well as all regulatory entities such as the Central Bank of Iran, Central Insurance, the Civil Aviation Organization, and Data Services Company of Iran. Also, select banks such as Bank Melli are exempt from privatization. On the balance, it would seem reducing the size of the executive branch to facilitate greater infrastructure investments and higher government efficiency can't have succeeded, seeing as the share of government companies in the overall state budget has grown from below 60% in 2005 to about 75% in the current Iranian year. One forecast goes as such, that one of these two scenarios will emerge. First, that current privatization plans will be impossible to achieve, therefore leading to a greater budget deficit, which in turn will lead to greater inflationary pressures on the economy. And second, that the government, to achieve its own financial objectives, will have to transfer more of its assets to the semi-state sector. And this would change the balance, or the partial balance, between key power networks in the country. Regarding presidential promises, Raisi has said that to reduce the price of essential goods in the domestic market, reliance on foreign currency resources must be minimized through achieving self-sufficiency in the production of essential goods. This is while he said he'd build 4 million housing units in the next 4 years. He has urged for a participatory policy in implementing his plans.
A leap in domestic production takes place when there's strong support, both qualitatively and quantitatively, for the producers. Let me give you a couple of examples. There's a specific need in the country for home appliances, which can be addressed either by importing goods or building them inside the country. If domestic production isn't responsible for the need, people would have to turn to foreign products, even if they are of lower quality. On the other hand, if the domestic product doesn't have any competition, like the car industry, the companies no longer feel the need to improve the quality of their products.
Investment priorities in the new government will matter much, both to reforming the situation the country finds itself in and earning credibility for Raisi and the governing system. Principalists have long criticized their moderate rivals' failure in what they call growing the economy and improving living standards and livelihood. And Raisi will have to deliver on promise of improvement.
There has been a lot of issues that have been destroyed people's trust. The public has lost all its trust. The government is facing problems in that regard. Suppose you want to rebuild social trust, but whatever the officials say, people regard it with skepticism. This is the worst situation any government can face.
To sum up with a look at foreign policy, the new president has no intention of giving up on the JCPOA, as the deal will result in the lifting of sanctions and some relief to the economy. But his greater confidence will remain in ties with the likes of China and Russia, who are also touched by direct U.S. sanctions and are good investor prospects in Iran, provided domestic corruption and misuse of contracts is controlled. Also, Raisi will avoid further confrontation with the GCC, as he believes oil-rich Persian Gulf states could be key for Iran's re-entry into international trade and financial systems. That'll be all for today. Thanks from the whole team. Do join us again at the same times next week, as you never know what's on. Bye for now.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shiraz Agha. Thank you for joining us here today. Today we're going to be examining a very important question with respect to the necessity of prophethood, which is something that we've been talking about in some of our sessions. That question is this, that some people object to revelation and the necessity of prophethood by saying that revelation itself teaches us that it's not proper for somebody to follow somebody who is similar to him himself. You should only follow somebody who is better than you. If there's something or some being which is similar to you in form and in all of his characteristics, and he's similar to you from all respects, what is it's wrong for you to follow him. You should always follow somebody who's better than you. At the same time, we see that the person who's bringing revelation to us is a prophet who is a human being. He's a human being. He has a body like us. He looks like us. He walks like us. He talks like us. Right? He has a mind like us. He's not some creature that's better than us. So why should we follow this person who's bringing us this revelation? In other words, following revelation here implies that we would be denying one of the basic tenets that revelation itself speaks to us and tells us about. And this is therefore, in other words, it's contradictory to follow revelation. On one hand, revelation is telling us to always follow somebody who's better than us, not to follow somebody who's less than us or equal to us. At the same time, it's asking us to follow this prophet who is a human being like us and similar to us. This then is the objection. This objection is interesting to note that this objection is a very old and ancient objection. It existed from times immemorial, even existed at the times of the Prophet. The pagan Arabs, they also mentioned this objection in many times to the Prophet. It's been reflected in many of the verses of the Holy Quran. Let's look at some of these verses. It's beneficial here to look at some of these verses. In Surah Anbiya, verse 3, God Almighty says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, وَأَسَرُّ النَّجْوَى الَّذِينَ ظَلَمُوا هَلْ هَذَا إِلَّا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ. These people who is in believers, he said, is this person not a human being like you? Why should you follow him? In another verse, in Surah Mu'minun, verse 33 to 34, God Almighty also mentions something similar. He says, quoting the disbelievers, he says, مَا هَذَا بِسْمِ اللَّهِ الرَّحْمَنِ الرَّحِيمِ مَا هَذَا إِلَّا بَشَرٌ مِثْلُكُمْ يَأْكُلُ مِمَّا تَأْكُلُونَ مِمَّا تَأْكُلُونَ مِنْ وَيَشْرُبُ مِمَّا تَشْرُبُونَ وَلَئِنْ أَتَأْتُمْ بَشَرًا مِثْلَكُمْ إِنَّكُمْ إِذًا لَخَاسِرُونَ. He says that the disbelievers said, if you follow a human being who is like yourself, then you are surely at loss. This then is the objection. This objection can be answered in a very simple manner. And that is this, that it's true that apparently this person who brings revelation, this prophet, is a human being. And he's similar to us from this point of view. However, this is a human being which is spiritually advanced and he has progressed from this point of view. And therefore, from this point of view, he's not equal to us. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were examining the necessity of prophethood and revelation. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
The Light.
Last year, a powerful explosion in Beirut turned life around for thousands of Lebanese. Now, a number of people have decided to build a monument in honor of the victims of the terrible accident. 27 individuals and organizations have pooled their efforts to build a giant 25-meter sculpture at the site of last August's explosion. The artwork is called Gesture and is made out of reclaimed metal debris. It looks like it's handing a flower to the city of Beirut. When completed, Gesture will also have a water and light installation. The project was conceived and designed by Nadim Karam, one of Lebanon's most celebrated artists. South Korean medical workers manning drive-through coronavirus testing centers have a new way to cool off and rest amid hot summer days, recovery buses. The medical workers are now able to enjoy their breaks at these buses, which are equipped with air conditioning, cold water, and snacks. The workers are allowed to take off their protective suits that trap heat and create an environment difficult to tolerate. Some of the buses also have shower booths and bunk beds to help the medical workers deal with their hard work. They say the buses are refreshing.
I almost feel like I'm stuck in a heat dome, like in a car with the air conditioner off in the middle of summer. It's so hot that it's even hard to breathe. But when I come here during the break time and rest in a much cooler and more pleasant environment like an igloo, I can recharge and work cheerfully in the afternoon.
These buses were first designed and used as resting places for Korean police officers and firefighters. Now, 22 of them are deployed to testing centers across the country. The government is considering deploying more recovery buses amid rising temperature and a new wave of coronavirus infections.
An aquarium in the French capital, Paris, is celebrating the birth of a baby black-tip shark. The female shark is 55 centimeters long and weighs 560 grams. She's currently quarantined in a small pond so she wouldn't come under attack by adult sharks. Officials at the aquarium say she'll be ready to swim amongst other sharks in 3 to 4 months. She was born last week at the aquarium, an event the caretakers say is very rare.
It's a rare event for us, which hadn't happened here for the past 5 years. The birth is quite rare in aquariums and in captivity in general. In fact, there are often embryos that won't survive, or they're sometimes stillborn. That's what makes it a rare event, which also occurs at night. We had the chance to observe it during the day, which allowed us to intervene very quickly, and we're able to recover the little one.
The International Union for the Conservation of Nature has designated black-tipped sharks as a vulnerable species. It's particularly poached in some countries for their distinctive fins. The marvelous creatures have a torpedo-shaped body and often spin out of water while eating. They have specialized cells in their snouts that detect the electric current of nearby prey.
A Turkish farmer hails the miraculous survival of two baby goats from deadly wildfires. Sergeant Bayat said seeing his livestock threatened by flames was the most difficult moment in his life. Bayat said although he lost 8 of his animals in the fire, he found new life after the survival of a newborn goat. He said the mother of the kid had been killed in a wildfire. Bayat called it a miracle. But there was also another baby goat.
We found another goat amidst a wildfire. She has a baby. There you go. Miracle number 2.
Bayat says although his farm was severely damaged, he's now over the moon at the survival of the baby goats. The massive forest fire in southern Turkey broke out on Wednesday, fueled by strong winds. Wildfires are common in southern Turkey in the summer, but local authorities say the latest fires have covered a much bigger area.
Cats are notoriously volatile animals, as we all know. One moment they are purring for your attention, and the next they can't stand being touched. Now, a Canadian firm has come up with an app that can help you better understand your feline friends. The app is called Tabli and works with artificial intelligence. The AI's algorithm was trained at a clinic in the city of Calgary. The developers of Tabli hope their product can be useful for novice cat owners and vets alike. The app can also help monitor the health of cats. Tabli's developer explains how the app functions.
It uses artificial intelligence, so specifically machine learning, and it's coupled with the feline grimace scale. And what the feline grimace scale is, it's a way for humans to be able to determine if a cat is in pain or not based on the ear positioning, the eye positioning, the muzzle, whiskers, things like that. And so we were able to train a machine using machine learning and a series of images to be able to make that determination. So if you're somebody who has a cat but you don't have that training, you can just use the app and it can help you determine how your cat is doing.
Sounds very useful, but Tabli is not perfect though and runs into problems when trying to decipher the mood of black cats. Despite the hiccups, the developers say the program will get better at doing its task as its artificial intelligence develops through practice. Humans have damaged the environment, perhaps more than any other species, but there are always some who go out of their way to help animals in distress. Known in Cyprus as Birdman, 28-year-old Konstantinos Antonio is a wildlife veterinarian. Every year, he saves hundreds of sick or wounded wild birds. The animals brought to him are usually found by regular people. Konstantinos says climate change has made the task of assisting birds more urgent as their survival becomes harder and harder. The Cypriot environmentalist usually frees the animals after treatment in the presence of other people in order to raise awareness about the issue. vertical forest has transformed the Chinese megacity of Chengdu into a concrete jungle, making the lives of the residents greener. Each unit at the 8-tower complex has a balcony with around 20 types of luxuriant plants and greenery. The green space filters air and noise pollution while creating a spectacular view. The project in the southwestern city was completed in 2018, and all of the 826 apartments were sold out at the time.
I think it's quite good. The air quality is pretty good and much better than my old houses. The air is good when you wake up in the morning, and the green trees are good for us elderly people. They are good for our eyes.
Besides all the benefits, the apartments have a major problem. They have been overrun by plants and invaded by mosquitoes. The issue has forced some of the occupants to move out. Other cities around the world, such as New York and Copenhagen, have also launched similar green housing projects.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
The best visited multimedia exhibit in the world known as Van Gogh Live. The experience has opened in Munich after being postponed a number of times due to COVID-19.
Van Gogh is just the most famous artist in the world. He is also a prototype artist. He is the last artist who then tragically dies at the end. His life story was just fascinating, and that's why he is Van Gogh. But of course, his artworks are fascinating.
Featuring some of Van Gogh's best-known works, the exhibition is not only a feast for the eyes, but the senses, with music and smells to accompany the colorful projections. The exhibit is supposed to smell like the countryside because of where Van Gogh lived. However, the organizers say visitors cannot really experience the feeling due to wearing masks. Van Gogh Alive, the experience was first presented in Singapore in 2011. Since then, the multimedia exhibit has been seen in 70 cities and has attracted some 6 million visitors. Conservation measures have managed to bring the world's most endangered cat back from the brink of extinction. In 2002, there were less than 100 Iberian lynx left in the wild. The situation prompted officials in Spain and Portugal to save the animal through a captive breeding program. They also tried hard to fight poaching and reintroduce rabbits, the cat's major prey, into the wild. By the end of 2020, there were over 1,100 Iberian lynx living in the two countries, most of them in Spain's southern region of Andalusia.
The main cause of death for wildlife, certainly in the natural environment, is related to human activities, roadkill, poaching, unwanted encounters. So the less interaction they have with humans, the better.
Despite the successful measures, the International Union for Conservation of Nature still lists the animal as endangered. It's estimated that the species will be out of danger only when its population surpasses 3,000. Urban development, hunting, and roadkill are the major reasons of death for wild lynxes these days. Brazilians have come up with a creative idea to combat population, that is pollution, and global warming, repopulating mangroves. The project is aimed at reforesting an area equal to 75 football fields in Guanabara Bay. Organizers hope to make the biggest mangrove garden in the country. Mangroves, which usually grow in tropical regions, are essential to maintaining water quality and clarity. They filter and trap sediments, heavy metals and other pollutants. Mangrove forests are also able to store 3 to 4 times more carbon than other forests.
Nostalgia is in the air in Paris as the streets of the city are enlivened, that is, with old vehicles. The French capital has hosted an annual parade called Summer Crossing of Paris. It brought together over 700 vintage cars, motorbikes, buses, and tractors from all over Europe. The route started from a Vincennes Castle east of Paris and ended in the southwest of the city. Drivers crossed the iconic monuments such as the Eiffel Tower and the Arc de Triomphe.
It is extraordinary because the automobile industry heritage and the Parisian architectural heritage, which is obviously absolutely fabulous, echo each other. We are driving through all of Paris's most beautiful squares.
The 14th version of the event drew hundreds of enthusiastic visitors from across France. People were asked to wear masks and keep social distancing because of COVID-19. Tehran municipality has inaugurated an art garden that puts on display Iran's art and culture. As Youssef Jalali reports, the cultural facility aims to reconnect visitors with Iran's rich past amid increasing preoccupation with modern lives.
Sit back and enjoy the beauty of Iran's ancient culture. In Kushk Art Garden, located in the heart of Tehran, visitors get to learn about Iran's music, literature, painting, and calligraphy, far from the hustle and bustle of modern life. Kushk hosts Iranian artists who create masterpieces that have their roots in thousands of years ago.
Miniature painting has been around in Iran since thousands of years ago. In miniature, we paint flat images with a myriad of details. We avoid adding shades to make it as flat as possible, since in the past, Iranians believed that divine light gives shape to everything.
Metal engraving first stepped into existence 7,000 years ago in Iran. It is the art of incising decorations and metals. In this workshop, I will be available every day for visitors to see how I can turn metals into beautiful handicraft.
Kushk is part of a bigger project dubbed Art Garden. The cultural complex consists of an art lake, poem and literature house, music house, and Kushk Garden, each trying to promote an aspect of Iran's culture. Tehran municipality says it inaugurated the peaceful place, for it says cultural identity has been overshadowed by modern technology.
This precious place was a much-needed initiative to preserve the Iranian art and culture. As time goes by, technology gets more and more intertwined with our daily lives, and our genuine culture slips into oblivion. We need to have such cultural centers that safeguard our cultural heritage.
The Art Garden is situated on Abbasabad Hills in downtown Tehran. In recent years, the area has turned into a tourist attraction that houses structures that combine modern technology with ancient culture, such as this large pedestrian overpass called Tabiat Bridge, and the Middle East's largest planetarium, dubbed Mina Dome.
Kushk will be the last piece of Tehran's art garden, and will be a hotspot for a range of cultural activities, all aiming to revive the ancient Iranian art and culture, which experts believe have become a lost piece in today's hectic life. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.